To go back to yesterday, something, and the day before, and probably the day before that, Dharma Vichaya. The seven wings of enlightenment, the Bodhipakshas. So what? The first factor of enlightenment. Is Smriti or Sati, so mindfulness. And then into the second one, Dharma Vichaya, which crops up in as a component in many other different formulations. You find this with the Dharma, but each time you come across something in a different formulation, it is slightly changed. You know, the dynamic of it is slightly changed. But here, in the seven Bodhyangas, we're moving from the general, if you like, mindfulness, awareness, to the particular in terms of Dharma Vichaya, the investigation of mental states. Or you could say, well, I could say, that it's the application of reflection to mindfulness. So Dharma Vichaya is also implicit in a really important and wonderful list called the 11 positive mental events. Go to know your mind to find this, because you know, these 11 positive mental events aren't fixed or limited, but nevertheless they're enough, as it were, to provide a counterweight to 26 negative, really sticky states of mind. So you only need 11. I mean, that's perfectly doable. And they counteract things like resentment, spite, righteous indignation, envy, slyness and deceit, lack of trust, worry. You know, all you need is a bit of hurry and apatrapia, and there you are. It's like they're like lasers to negativity. Anyway, that was me being as my lightsaber. I don't know if you got that. So it's a refining of the general to the particular, Smriti and Dharma Vichaya. And then, yeah, that's the start of a spiral path. Creative conditionality. So in a sutta known as the Debeda Vitaka Sutta, it's taken me 8 years to be able to say that, if we allow ourselves to dwell on unskillful thoughts or images, that will become the inclination of our mind. So this has been prompted by the inclination of the tree. The inclination in the sutta about Mahanama. So, if we allow ourselves to dwell on unskillful thoughts or images, that will become the inclination of our mind. In other words, it will become habitual, the great killer of meditation. I don't think that's too strong to say that. I just had a little conversation in my head. In other words, the opposite is true. So we will become what we think about. So this nailed the connection between ethics and meditation. However, the Buddha also concluded that it is possible to think excessively. He found that too much thinking made him tired. This is what he said. And when he was tired, he couldn't concentrate or become absorbed. And this is psychical tiredness, it's not physical tiredness. So when that happened, he stopped thinking. He quietened and steadied his mind. So this is mindfulness, and it's also reflection. And he became one-pointed, which is a factor of dhyana. And so he reflected and he meditated. So he speaks not only of two kinds of thought, skillful and unskillful, but also two kinds of activity, reflection and meditation. Mm. So we need to learn again and again. I don't know why this reminded me of the quote that, you know, the quote I just read, again and again, to still our minds, to make them still, to let them become calm and serene. I know it's a long winding, but here we go. So, two other dhyana factors we're going to explore now, vitaka and vichara. What we're doing in, when we meditate and when we reflect is that we're trying to change the grain of our mind. The grain of our mind. So I'm a great lover of maps. You know, you give me a book of, give me an atlas of all kinds. You know, I just can get completely absorbed in maps. I let go of them when I moved here, but I had lots of atlases, big books of collected maps from charity shops, you know, second-hand shops, nobody wants them. And maps contain all kinds, you can get maps for everything, you know. They illuminate our universe. You can get maps, you know, of the sky in the northern hemisphere. And then when I lived in New Zealand, I had already looked at maps of the stars in the southern hemisphere. You can see completely different constellations down there. And then there's that little, which somehow you in Spain you can see. Anyway, Scorpio. So I find these very exciting. There are maps that give you, you know, a two-dimensional sense of a three-dimensional space or area, vista, landscape. You know, maps and map making are amazing. All those intrepid people going out, I don't know how they did it, you know, make maps of unknown and never before seen terrain. You know, it's a diagram that maps our world, you know, and this ability of us, of our species, to make maps, I think is very, very significant. You know, so maps shape our world, shape our experience of the cosmos, you know. So the maps that we choose are very important. And the Buddha was a great map maker. He was a map maker of the mind. And he was a real visionary, you know. And much of it is you know, being recapitulated in this century. Even now, even in secular terms, say. So, you know, the mandala, mandalas are maps. So the mandala of the five jhanas is a map of the enlightened mind, you know. And however we read them, our experience will be different. They will be different from one year to the next. And while they show us where to go, you know, we still have to live it. So you can have your ordnance survey map and all your trig points and everything. It looks nothing like the map, does it, when you're there? It doesn't. It's the same between, you know, the example of Ratnaguna, you can drive in a car in the countryside or you can get out and take a look. You know, you will have used a map to get there, probably. And sometimes a signpost can be a bit wonky and unreliable. So a map can show us where to go, but we have to live it, you know. So we need to be aware that the map, in this case, it's going to be the Honeyball Sutta. We can read the sutta, but that doesn't mean that we know it. So I have a map for you. So this is something for life. Is mine. A bit battered. Maybe for you. Please take one and pass it on. So when you first look at a map, it just doesn't mean very much, usually. Or you're looking for something particular. London. So our task is to, we have a need to bring clarity to the situation in which we find ourselves, whatever that might be. And clarity is something that's intrinsic to the mind. You know, an ignorance is more like an ethical distortion or a cognitive contamination. Even though it's a root poison. Something can be done about it. So the mandala of the five Buddhas or of the five Ajnanas gives us a map of the mind that is pure and clear and ethical and sensitive. So how do we move from a mind dominated by prapancha to a mind that is free and open? Answers on a postcard to me before the end of the retreat. Okay, here's the kind of wordy bit. So in the Honeyball Sutta, first of all, let's try and get a few kind of way markers on this map.
Excuse me, is this from the is this map inspired by the Honeyball Sutta?
It is.
Yes.
This is a representation of what the Buddha is saying in the Honeyball Sutta. This is another way of looking at, say, the wheel of life. It's like a nidana chain, but it's slightly different. I have got another version of this that looks like a wheel of life. I'll put that in there. But this is simplified to a degree. I find pictures helpful. I love words, but I find something like this helpful. So what I want to draw your attention to is the left-hand side, the cloud, which says primary reality, which we are familiar with. So we have contact, spasha. We have sensations. And we have this thing called samnya, which is identification or apperception. That's not the bit I want to go into. particularly, but they are present in the primary reality. And on the basis of that, we start to think, we have an initial thought about what is coming in through the senses. So it's attention, it's thinking about. Subhuti says, vitakka is a primary tool in handling experience. Although vitakka and vichara will also be part of the dynamic of development of insight. So the main thing I want to draw your attention to is what these words in red, unwise attention, and in blue, wise attention. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
So what we have here is what I call the red root or the blue root. So the red root, on the basis of that initial thought, takes us into a whole developing dynamic that is in its nature passive, habitual, unexamined. I don't know if that rings any bells.
Mm-hmm.
About anything that and or you can do the blue root, which the Buddha talks of as wise attention. So unwise attention fuels wrong view. Wise attention fuels right view. Wise attention is unbiased and open and kindly. So in the Hannibal Sutta, Dandapani the Shakyan, who was a slightly awkward character, it has to be said, he was one of these people who wanted to trip up the Buddha. He was with guile, if you know what I mean. So anyway, what do you teach, what do you proclaim? And the Buddha says, friend, I assert and proclaim my teaching. One who truly follows it does not quarrel anymore with anyone in the world. One who truly follows it does not fall into the unwise attention that underlies misinterpretations, fuels prapancha. See, follow the red root?
Mm-hmm.
That underlies misinterpretations of the world, but remains content, living in truth, without perplexity, free from worry, free from craving, free from craving for any kind of being. The misinterpretations that beset you are born of mental proliferation, prapancha. The misinterpretations that beset you are born of prapancha. Mental proliferation is born of delighting in, welcoming, and holding to the unexamined underlying contents of your mind, which is anushayas. There are seven of them. I'm not going to go into them. They are dynamite. I first came across them. Ayakema goes into them in some depth. Anyway.
Can you spell that?
It's on the page.
It's in the red root, on here.
Yeah.
Underlying tendencies, anushayas. There are seven. They're just, you know, your regular poisons.
3 plus 4.
Pardon? 3 plus 4. 3 plus 4, yes. And then the Buddha goes into them in detail. So, stay with it. So there's the six senses, dependent on the senses and the forms they find, sense consciousness arises. There is contact, sparsha, and then with contact as a condition, there is feeling. So we're back here in the big cloud, sensations. What one feels, that one names. So what? That's samya, identification. What you feel, you name. What one names, one thinks about, That's vitaka. What one thinks about with unwise attention, that one mentally proliferates. Papancha. From mental proliferation are born perceptions and notions, which is views, which beset, harass, and overwhelm you. With reference to past, present, and future elements of experience. So here we go, papancha, views, and round we go again. And then comes what was the reading in the puja last night, in the sutta. So we examine what lies in your mind, and so on. And it is the ending of resorting to weapons, to quarrels, to brawls, to recriminations, to malicious words, to false speech. Here, with wise attention, these unhelpful states cease without remainder. In other words, as I interpret it, with the fading of papancha, anything is possible. It's that simple. With the fading, the attenuation of papancha, enlightenment is there. Enlightenment is there. This is my most recent unpredictable form of inspiration. I really do think it's that simple. It's that simple. And so I feel a huge amount of faith in the Buddha's teaching that liberation is possible. And actually, it's not that hard. And this is a key. This map, oh, I'm mixing my metaphors here, but this is a key. This is a key. Okay, so hang on. I would like to give you a definition of papancha that is a little bit more, it's Christina Feldman's definition. Because obviously these words are in the process of becoming jargon in the movement, and we're going to lose its real imperative impact. We already have anglicized it into a verb, which is, we papanchize. Or I'm papanchizing. It's going to become jargon if it isn't already. And I want to guard against that because it's okay. Because the important thing about papancha is that it generates reactivity. How do you know that you have wrong views when you react? It is a dead giveaway. Any reaction is a sign that, dharmically speaking, a wrong view is present, a mitcha ditti of some kind. She beat me. She hurt me. She blah, blah, blah. Anyway, here is the definition. It is the proliferation of thoughts and mental events that generate reactivity and views. That cloud and distort our capacity to see and understand the way things actually are.
Can you say that again, please?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Papancha is the proliferation of thoughts and mental events. Mental events being a whole kind of, you know,
emotion.
Sorry.
Relationship. Stop.
That we get into. Sorry, where was I? Proliferation of thoughts and mental events that generate reactivity. That generate reactivity and views. Views that cloud and distort our capacity. That cloud and distort. I see this in the garden sometimes. Sometimes something you grow from seed doesn't come true. It just doesn't come true. I mean, it doesn't grow truly. We say it hasn't come true in God. So things can grow in a distorted way. Views that cloud and distort our capacity to see and understand the way things actually are. So Papancha is the source of most of the agitation, restlessness, anxiety and unease that we experience in our hearts and minds. It's Papancha that often leads us to struggle with ourselves and others. Papancha is certainly very much involved in obsession, rumination and preoccupation. That which we frequently dwell upon becomes the inclination of our minds. So it's unskillful. Outwardly, Papancha has a very big role to play in the generation of violence, war, greed, consumerism, disharmony. So in one of the discourses, the Buddha says that the definition of a well-trained mind is a person who thinks the thoughts they wish to think, but does not think the thoughts they don't wish to think. I mean, you know, the image of reining in or being collected. Sometimes it said, if you want to know about your past, look to your mind now. So there was a Tibetan teacher who I used to have this up on my wall. And it was, if you want to know what I've been like, look at me now. If you want to know what I'm going to be like, look at me now. So look at your mind now. It's not surprising we have so many thoughts, is it? We're so gorgeous. But what is surprising is that we give so much authority to them. Mm-hmm. That is surprising. Mm-hmm. So some of the Papancha that we find ourselves lost in is fairly toxic. Let's be truthful. The judgment loops that we get into about ourselves and others, the thoughts that go around and around, solidify the truth for us of those judgments. We can be lost in depression and our thoughts about our worthiness, thoughts of despair and hopelessness can spin round and round, solidifying into that sense of bleakness. That's the way I go. We can be anxious or phobic and the whole world is assessed as being an invader or fearful and generating endless thinking and then endless action to try and protect ourselves from injury. In a way, all very reasonable. Very, very reasonable and understood, given the way the world is now. So, and this works, I think, on the macro level, in terms of the deliberate stirring of divisiveness. You know, we live in times where it is actively being stirred up and encouraged in society.
What propounds you?
Divisiveness, aggression, violence,
bigotry.
Yes.
Polarisation.
Polarisation. Here we go. So we are naming a few demons here. Well, we are. Part of the reason I'm in the state I'm in is because I was reminded of a... it's all her fault. I was reminded of a talk I was at in 1978. I know it's hard to believe, I was very young. not that young. Bante gave a talk at the London Buddhist Centre on Papasamavade that year. So the London Buddhist Centre probably only just opened. I do not know what happened. I mean, the place, I often, in my memory will distort it, I know. In my memory, the room was enormous. It was packed. The room is not enormous. And Bante simply stood there, as far as I know, without any notes, and spoke for an hour and a half. And part of the talk, talking about demons, was he talked about this demon that pursued Padmasambhava in Tibet. So Padmasambhava wrote, along with Yeshe Sogyal, his consort, the life and liberation of Padmasambhava. So he describes in great detail in a number of cantos his progress towards liberation. I can't talk about it. I don't know what happened. So Bante started to talk about this demon, Tarpanagpo, which means black salvation.
What is it called again?
Tarpanagpo, Tarpanagpo, which translates as black salvation. And this was a demon that was absolutely, Why am I saying this? Because I understand about demons in the world. And with Singha Sri's help, we understand how to be with demons, how to bring them on our side, you know, how we engage in the work of transformation. And it is through Papancha we will meet our demons. And we need to do that. We need to know, we might have little itsy bitsy, quite cute and friendly demons, but nevertheless, they will eat away. What do they need? What do they want? What are they trying to tell you? There is wisdom in there. But some of them are just plain destructive. And those forces are at work in the world, and in a way, Tara Loka is just this little tiny bullock in its, you know, in the face of this. A little tiny line in the sand for different ethical values, a different way of life, a kindly and loving and ultimately far more powerful way of life. I can't go on about black salvation. Okay. So how much time have I got?
15 minutes.
Okay. So,
is it going to the side to ask about why it was called black salvation?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Oh.
And I don't know.
No.
That's for you to find out.
Oh.
It's just a translation of Tarpanagpo. I don't know. My Tibetan is not great. Okay. So it's a habit, Papancha. It's toxic.
So have a care.
Have a care.
It can be toxic. And it is important to see the habit of papancha, is that even when it feels fairly benign, you know, or even feels pretty pleasant, as it can, of course it can. Actually, the habit of papancha is not at all benign. And it's not at all benign because it doesn't have a conscience. Yada, 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 yada. So we have to bring awareness to that. This goes back to being able to choose what to think about and choose what not to think about. Papancha doesn't have a conscience. We, as the beautiful humans that we are, we have a conscience.
So it's not planning.
Mm.
Yeah, it is. But
because I've got to feed the cat is quite pleasant.
Yeah, and it may be ethically neutral, but actually there's goodwill in there. Feeding the cat. You know.
But you also might be fantasizing about feeding the cat in order to not be with your direct experience.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
You could be obsessing about feeding the cat.
Mm.
I mustn't forget to feed the cat.
Perhaps I'll buy that other brand of cat food. Mm. You know, she doesn't seem to be doing too well on that one.
Mm-hmm.
I think what she needs is the creme de la creme of cat food.
Mm.
I can.
And so on and so on. On. Meanwhile, people are dying and the sun is out. Get a life.
Let it catch rats.
So, anyway, it has no conscience, you know. And it's not even as if we can choose to proliferate about the present and then choose not to proliferate about difficulties. The habit of propantia, that tendency within us, will be hijacked. If we're not mindful, it's going to be hijacked by aversion, by craving, by conceit, by fear, by jealousy. So, of course, much of papancha is an internal activity. It's a psychological and an emotional activity. But then, of course, it does govern and direct and shade or bring a certain hue, colour, hue to our speech, our actions, our choices, and our relationships. So it's important to see that papancha can be individual, but it can also be collective. So collective papancha is even more toxic than individual papancha. Gossip is the prime classic example. We don't like someone. We find someone who also doesn't like the same person. And we feel much more reassured or reaffirmed in our dislike and in our views and the righteousness of what we can generate in the story together. We find the reassurance of views through collective papancha. So, my question is there a collective papancha within your network of friendships? I have to say that I was once in a meeting, an order meeting, and someone who wasn't present at the meeting came up within a quite, like a tea break, you know, we kind of relaxed, we weren't in the meeting. And when that person was mentioned, I actually wasn't aware that I'd done it, I rolled my eyes. And Sanga Devi was on me like a limpet. After, you know, just after that, she just came up to me and said, you know, what was that? What is that about? What do you mean? You know, she absolutely. So it's the small things. You know, don't sweat the small stuff is one way of looking at, you know, but the small stuff. Articulates a novel like War and Peace, you know, it's like it's epic. And we're just doing that kind of thing all the time. So be careful. Be afraid.
Very afraid.
You know. So it's not that hard to spot, is it? And we can help each other with that. You know, so Papancha isn't something that's predetermined in a way. You know, the storms we find ourselves don't arise ready-made. They're not something you go and get off the shelf in the supermarket as a ready-made meal. This takes some preparation and cooking.
Can we sit your time?
Okay. So what is the solution? So it's like one of those big ropes that you find in old Docklands, you know, those big old ropes that used to secure the clipper ships there. They are huge and they are heavy and they are made up of tiny, tiny strands. So that's what Papancha is like. It's something woven and it gets heavy. And each thing of the each skein of the rope is made of several other skeins. It's, you know, weaves anyone. It's not difficult actually to fix this. Isn't that good? You know, the Buddha was so encouraging. Buddhism is essentially optimistic in its nature. Really optimistic. So, first, as I've already mentioned and stressed, and as we know, we need to be able to calm down, to be able to be mindful of our mind, be aware that we are aware. And so we need to, and we are in the process of already cultivating a mind that has a foundation of balance and steadiness and clarity. And kindness and appreciativeness. We are already engaged well on that way. So mindfulness especially is a kind of it's simple in this sense. Mindfulness without Papancha, very simple. It's also the preparation for insight. Why we're doing this is it's preparation for insight. So, in another sutta, the Buddha refers to the dwelling place of the mind, and our habitual dwelling place is where Papancha resides. So I like this idea of moving house. We can dwell somewhere else. I've never owned a property, but I gather it's pretty nice. You know? We can just simply swap viharas. There's another one in a very beautiful location that is clean and clear and simple, kind, you know, well furnished in the spiritual sense. You probably notice that every time you come back and somehow unhook one of these loops, that you are actually training yourself in letting go, you know, or giving up. So it's a kind of renunciation by stealth, where we're kind of sneaking renunciation in here, because it's letting go or giving up, and the choice is yours. It doesn't mean you have to give away your property or anything. You just have to kind of say, I don't want to be that resentful old crab any longer. I would like to do something about this. And that in itself is a step of renunciation. You know? We don't have to desperately try to fix something. You know? We're just trying to modify, to mould. You know, to disidentify, you know, to avoid that which we think is going to destroy us. Calm the body, calm the mind, and that calms the body. Calm the body, and calming the body helps to calm the mind. It's intentional. So it's a practice, and it's a bhavana practice. You know, reaction practice.
Let me ask a question about that.
In a moment.
Good. Thank you.
Let's hope we have one. It might present itself. So instead of feeding the habit of distractedness, we're feeding and nurturing the habit of non-distractedness. The being present and being simply here. And then when you do that, you can feel yourself coming closer to that moment of contact. Mm-hmm. The Buddha said that the wise seek to understand contact and the foolish pursue it. I think the Buddha had a sense of humour. Mm-hmm. The Pali Canon is full of jokes. The Buddha was really great. Anyway, same with Bhante.
Understand contact instead of pursuing it.
Yeah, understand contact instead of pursuing it. Contact, oh yeah, grasp. Contact, oh no, push. Oh God. There are different types of pancha. You interested in different types of pancha?
Mm-hmm.
I'll just give you the headings. Craving-based papancha. It's called tanha papancha, and it has no conscience. Then we have ditti papancha, which means views.
I thought you said ditti.
Yeah, well, it's D-I-T-T-H-I.
Okay.
Dihiti. It could be a little song. The stream of thinking that revolves around opinions, prejudices, concepts, preconceived ideas. Mm. Ditti papancha is the basis of most of the arguments we have in the world. Mm. Craving-based papancha, well, what do I need to say? It is the basis of the expectation and demands that we direct towards others and the world. It is based on unfulfilled need, a sense of incompleteness, or insufficiency. Now, who of us doesn't have that? So we have craving-based papancha. Who of us doesn't have the papancha of views? Every year, for 20 years, my New Year's resolution has been to be less opinionated. Well, it is. I hate New Year. Okay. And then we have fear-based papancha, which is called bhaya, B-H-A-Y-A, papancha. And this is well encouraged in our culture. This, I think, is what I was referring to, you know. It not only creates the other that we need to be afraid of, to demonize, surely never to understand. It also includes the phobias, the desire to find safety and guarantees in an unpredictable world. Mm-hmm. So bhaya, B-H-A-Y-E, fear, as opposed to the abhaya mudra, fearlessness, is projected onto people, events, countries, nationalities, races, you know, it's pretty big. And this last form, fear-based papancha, is the most important because it's the cornerstone of all the other papanchas I've mentioned.
Is that the same as discrimination?
Yeah. Well, it depends what you mean by discrimination.
Discriminating people.
Yeah. It's divisive. Yeah. So in this teaching, we're really learning what it means to see anew, to liberate the present and everything in it from the burden of the past. You know, to not the wise learning from the past, but the burden of the past. We're trying to liberate ourselves. And we can.
Can you repeat
yes,
the sentence?
Yes, we can. No, I can't. The glue that keeps the Papantu going, you know, starts with those sentences. I am. Any sentence that you use that starts with I am. So see how the storyteller is creating the view. Not just the story, but the view. I am, or I am not. It's and in meditation, the calming of shamatha meditation means that this I am becomes, as a sense, becomes attenuated. And in Vipassana meditation, once we are familiar with how to attenuate the self, we can then confront the self. And that is Vipassana meditation. But you can't do that without the basis of shamatha. Well, I would definitely never, ever, ever advise it. If it is to have more than a flash, you're creating the basis in your own heart and mind and body for sustained insight practice. You know, we have had, all of us in this room, a moment of perfect vision. We wouldn't be here without it. That first step of on the Noble Path. I mean, the Eightfold Path. So we know, we've had that momentary, spontaneous, perhaps, moment, which is unique to us as individuals. So, reaction practice is to be treasured in a way, and to be experienced on subtler and subtler levels, until that momentum, that kind of oscillation within, that swinging of the pendulum in our lives, becomes smaller and smaller. A pendulum at the bottom, there's quite a big swing. And we had a grandfather clock when I was little, and I used to find it very soothing, the tick tock, and I would watch the pendulum. It was it had a glass front, this long pendulum with this sort of brass weight at the bottom, and it would swing. And this is what we do. This is an analogy, a metaphor for reactivity, action and reaction, action and reaction. No wonder we're asleep. But as you move up, if you look up the pendulum, the movement of the brass, it's got a name. It's not pinnacle. What is it? I can't remember, but it's something like pinnacle. It just gets smaller and smaller, you know. And by the time you get up to the delicate mechanism behind the clock face, what is generating this big movement at the bottom of the pendulum, I'm labouring this, I'm sorry, is actually a very, very small piece of mechanical, beautiful, fine detail, almost imperceptible. So there is an enormous connection of experience between that little almost imperceptible movement behind the clock face and the pendulum swing at the bottom. They are not two. They are deeply connected. They work in tandem. They work together. So that move to insight is happening just as we prapanchayam out in the world. So what's it to be, girls? Unwise attention or wise attention? Are you going to reflect on the lakshanas? Or just dwell here? Because it's a circle. Our views and the way we shape our decisions shape our choices. Papancha can inform our views, or the blue root. Wise attention fuels right view. And I don't know if you notice, it's much shorter. It's much shorter and far less complicated than the red root. So freedom or imprisonment. It's up to you. No, it's not. It's not. It's up to me. I choose freedom. I choose freedom. But it is up to you. Please prosper. Live well and prosper. I wish that for you. Really. That's it.
Thank you.
No, it's not it. Friends. So, back to the honey ball sutta. So examine what lies in your mind. He's so kind, the Buddha. So examine what lies in your mind. Examine its movement and its nature. Examine what it serves. In other words, choose what you think about. Realize that what you delight in, welcome and hold to, is impermanent. Oh sugar. Subject to change and inclines you to suffering when wise attention is not present. So you can bring wise attention. 10. If you do not delight in, welcome and hold to things which are impermanent and subject to change, but instead see them clearly, mental proliferation will not arise. You just have to see them clearly for what they are. Papancha will not arise. This is the end of the underlying tendencies to greed, to aversion, to views, to doubt, to conceit, to desire for being, ignorance. This instead is freedom. And this is the end of resorting to weapons, to quarrels, to brawls, to recriminations. Malicious words, false speech. Here, with wise attention, these unhelpful states cease. Cease. The cool cave, without reminder, without remainder, without remainder. I find that so appealing. Friends, it is as though a man needing heartwood, seeking heartwood for their fire, I guess, wandering in search of heartwood, thought that heartwood should be sought for among the branches and leaves of a great tree, strong in heartwood, rather than in the root and trunk where it is actually to be found. I'll read that again. The Buddha uses this as a simile. Friend, it is though a person needing heartwood, you know the wood that's at the heart of an old tree in the trunk. It's called heartwood. It's the best wood, but yeah, and it's mature in a mature tree. A person needing heartwood, seeking heartwood, wandering in search of heartwood, thought that heartwood should be sought for among the branches and leaves of the tree, of a great tree, which is strong in heartwood, rather than in the root and trunk where it is actually to be found. So we're close, but we're just slightly in the wrong place. We're in the branches and the leaves, which are very beautiful. But actually, what we're looking for is the heartwood. The Buddha's attendant, Ananda, said, "Venerable sir, just as if a man, exhausted by hunger and weakness, came upon a honey ball, wherever he would bite into it, he would find a sweet, delectable flavour. So too, any able-minded person, wherever they might scrutinise with wise attention the meaning of this discourse on our Dharma, would find satisfaction and confidence of mind." So I wish you satisfaction and confidence of mind. And the honey ball, may it be sweet for you. That's it.
Thank you.
Oh no. Thank you.